By 1913, there were something like 16,000 separate companies in the city's garment business, many just like the Borgonix shop on Sheriff Street. The threshold for getting involved in the business was very low. It was basically a business built on the sewing machine, and sewing machines don't cost that much, says Daniel Sawyer, a historian who has written widely on the garment industry. So you didn't need a lot of capital. And at the turn of the 20th century, it was probably $50 to buy a machine or two. All you had to do to be a contractor was to have a couple sewing machines, some irons, and a couple of workers. The profit margins were very low, but you could make some money. Listen to how Borgnick describes his decision to expand beyond aprons. From my study of the market, I knew that only three men were making children's dresses in 1890. One was an East Side tailor, near me, who made only to order, while the other two turned out an expensive product with which I had no desire at all to compete. I wanted to make popular-priced stuff, wash dresses, silks and woolens. It was my goal to produce dresses that the great mass of the people could afford, dresses that would, from the business angle, sell equally well to both large and small city and country stores. With Regina's help, she always had excellent taste and judgment, I made up a line of samples. Displaying them to all my old customers and friends, I hammered home every point. My dresses would save mother's endless work. The materials and sewing were as good and probably better than anything that could be done at home. The price was right for quick disposal. On one occasion, Borgnick realized that his only chance to undercut bigger firms was to convince the wholesalers to sell cloth to him directly, cutting out the middlemen. He went to see a Mr. Bingham at Lawrence and Company, a tall, gaunt, white-bearded Yankee with steel blue eyes. There the two of them were, the immigrant from rural Poland, his eyes ringed with fatigue, facing off in his halting English against the imperious Yankee. Borgnick said he wanted to buy 40 cases of cashmere. Bingham had never before sold to an individual company, let alone a shoestring operation on Sheriff Street. "You have a hell of a cheek coming in here and asking for favors," Bingham thundered, but he ended up saying yes. What Borgnick was getting in his 18-hour days was a lesson in the modern economy. He was learning market research. He was learning manufacturing. He was learning how to negotiate with imperious Yankees. He was learning how to plug himself into popular culture in order to understand new fashion trends. The Irish and Italian immigrants who came to New York in the same period didn't have that same advantage. They didn't have a skill specific to the urban economy. They went to work as day laborers and domestics and construction workers, jobs where you could show up for work every day for 30 years and never learn market research and manufacturing and how to navigate the popular culture and how to negotiate with the Yankees who ran the world. Or consider the fate of the Mexicans who immigrated to California between 1900 and the end of the 1920s to work in the fields of the big fruit and vegetable growers. They simply exchanged the life of a feudal peasant in Mexico for the life of a feudal peasant in California. The conditions in the garment industry were every bit as bad, Sawyer goes on, but as a garment worker, you were closer to the center of the industry. If you are working in a field in California, you have no clue what's happening to the produce when it gets on the truck. If you're working in a small garment shop, your wages are low and your conditions are terrible and your hours are long, but you can see exactly what the successful people are doing and you can see how you can set up your own job.